Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Sister Janet Ferns. To be an African is to believe in God. These words were addressed to me many years ago by the now Emeritus Cardinal of Mozambique. Recently, Cardinal Wilfred Napier of Durban, South Africa, echoed his thoughts as we spoke of the way in which, in African society, belief in God and reverence for the ancestors are an essential part of life. Also in today's programme, we look at the way in which development in a developing country does not necessarily mean any benefits for the poor. We will close by hearing of an initiative by a diocese in England to offer pastoral care through the internet. But first, Charles Collins now reminds us of the Pope's message from today's general audience.
Pope Benedict made an appeal on Wednesday to mark the World Day Against AIDS, which is observed on December 1st.
Comincio con un appello. Il primo dicembre prossimo ricorrerà la giornata mondiale contro l'AIDS.
The Pope urged all people of goodwill to multiply the efforts to stop the HIV virus, to fight the stigma often attached to those with the virus, and to treat those afflicted, especially children. The Holy Father said he was spiritually close to those suffering from the disease and their families, especially those families who have lost loved ones. Pope Benedict was speaking during his weekly general audience, where he continued his catechesis on the early figures of the Church.
In these three catechesis, we turn to St. Ephrem, the greatest of the Syriac fathers and the most renowned poet of the patristic age. St. Ephrem's theology, deeply grounded in the scriptures and profoundly orthodox in content, was expressed in poetic language marked by striking paradoxes and vivid imagery. Through his mastery of poetic symbolism, Ephrem sought to communicate, especially in his aims, the mystery of the Trinitarian God, the incarnation of the Eternal Son, born of the Virgin Mary, and the spiritual treasures contained in the Eucharist. His poetry and hymns not only enriched the liturgy, they also proved an important means of catechesis for the Christian community in the 4th century. Particularly significant is Ephrem's teaching on our redemption by Christ.
Following the audience, the Holy Father embarked his apostolic blessing on those gathered in the Paul VI audience hall.
Sit nomen Domini benedictum.
Ex hoc nunc et usque in saeculum.
Adiutorium nostrum in nomine Domini. Benedicat vos omnipotens Deus, Pater et Filius et Spiritus Sanctus.
Amen. I'm Charles Collins.
Many years ago, when I had the opportunity to chat with the then Archbishop of Lorenzo Marx in Mozambique, Alexandre José María Cardinal dos Santos, OFM, it was both an interesting and enlightening opportunity. The Archbishop, later created Cardinal, remarked that to be an African is to believe in God. These words have never left me, And after spending 13 years living and working in Africa with Africans, I can honestly say that I didn't meet an African atheist. It was always so easy to talk about God, regardless of anybody's religion or social status. On the many occasions when I visited the Ministry of Communications in Lusaka, there would be religious music playing in the background. Even in the minister's office, he would have, in the background, a religious program on either television or radio while he worked. Recently, talking to Cardinal Wilfred Napier of South Africa about the words of the now emeritus Mozambican Cardinal dos Santos, he was in complete agreement with his elder brother. To be an African is to believe in God. I have still never met an African atheist.
Yes, I don't think you will, because, you know, if it isn't direct belief in God, to extract from an African the idea of belief in the spirit world would be a very difficult thing to get. You'd never get that out of him, I don't believe.
To an African, the ancestors are all part and parcel of the relationship with God, as Cardinal Napier explains.
The ancestors are seen as members of that spiritual world who can influence our lives because they are in communication with God in some way. Not very clear, the theology isn't very clear, but there is that there are intermediaries in some form. God is too great to busy himself with human things, so the ancestors play that role. And I think you'd have to go a long way before you'd actually find an African who is not going to believe in some form or other in his ancestors and their intervention is in his or her life.
And so it means that, in a way, the church is already starting on a strong footing because it's going in to a certain level of belief right at the beginning.
That's true, yeah. Many people are finding, would live as if the ancestor religion is a lot easier, because most of the time the ancestors don't bother you too much. It's only here and there when they'll get hold of somebody, and usually it's through sickness or some other form of disability, which would be an indicator interpreted as the ancestors want you to do X, Y, and Z. But by and large, the ancestors wouldn't really worry them that much. So you get on with your life and you make sure that you're not going to do anything that's going to step out of line with what the ancestors would normally. And I think generally, just keeping the customs, family customs, the clan customs, the tribal customs, would be seen as sufficient to keep you within the fold of the ancestors, and therefore you wouldn't have too much to worry about in life. It's, in a sense, it's a comfortable kind of way of life. Comes the gospel, and it's calling to a very much different thing. It's calling for a constant searching for a relationship with God and following this man, Jesus Christ, in the process, and turning upside down so many of the values that the ancestral culture would take for granted. Because you've got the common ancestor, you in that family group, that extended family, you'll always look after each other. But a person who doesn't fall within that group can often be completely ignored. Mm. And therefore, this challenge from the gospel, I think, it can at times be very difficult for Africans to accept and to break out of looking after their own. I think one of the things, possibly the deeper reasons for a lot of the corruption that takes place in government is an expression of that. They're looking after family, looking after extended family, looking after people who have done you favors in the past and in that way have entered into a special relationship with you. And it's more that, I think, than simply greed, because there are those who are embezzling for the sake of having plenty of everything. But I think to a large extent, the kind of corruption that we see at the lower levels have a lot more to do with looking after the family than they have about the other.
And it seems when people manage to break out of that traditional mould, they're capable of tremendous generosity. Mm. And I think of what the secular Franciscan order was doing in Zambia and the small Christian communities in the parishes. Basically, if it wasn't for them, there wouldn't be half the work, a fraction of the work done with, say, the AIDS patients that's being done now. People give themselves so generously.
Yeah. We're finding that as well with the majority of the caregivers are really doing it way beyond what you'd call natural African or natural human family extension of compassion. It's certainly got much more to do with the gospel type of understanding of loving your neighbor as Christ has loved us.
Sometimes pain, sometimes winning, sometimes losing. Don't give up, the best is yet to come.
If you have never had a chance to see and hear Zambia's Sakala brothers, you have missed out on a rare treat. How on earth did two men manage to put so much energy into their singing and dancing? One is a Catholic, the other a Protestant. But together they could set the world on fire as they use their music to call for Christian values in Zambian society. Another group who works tirelessly for social justice in the country is the Jesuit Centre for Theological Reflection. Its director, Father Pete Henrio, was in Rome recently for a meeting celebrating the 40th anniversary of the watershed encyclical Populorum Progressio. In a wide-ranging conversation, we looked at the then forthcoming meeting and also at some of the situations facing Zambia today.
It is a big meeting. I think they're estimating there may be over 300 people from 80 countries from around the world coming for a 2.5-day conference on the 40th anniversary of Populum Progressio, the great social document of Paul VI, 1967. That really lays out the meaning of development, still very, very relevant today. So the conference is sponsored by the Vatican Justice and Peace, Cardinal Martino, and it's addressing a series of themes on the meaning of development, how to deal with poverty, conflict issues, series of papers, a chance for those of us from Africa to get together and talk, those from Asia, those from North America, so sectional groups. But it should be very interesting because, at least in my view, that's one of the great documents of all times.
But you're coming from Zambia. You head the Jesuit Centre for Theological Reflection. What relevance does Populorum Progressio have?
Well, it's a very good issue, Janet. You know, I have a wonderful opportunity working with a team of 13 Zambians, myself, at the Jesuit Centre for Theological Reflection. And we focus a lot on development issues. Zambia, as you know, is a very rich country in resources, very poor in some of its development or so, but tremendous potential. And so then one says, well, what does development mean for a country like that? Is it just economic growth, or is it also very, very necessary that the people are carried along with it in terms of social growth and dealing with the whole issues of poverty? Now, this document is beautiful in terms of its definition of development. It isn't just economic progress or something. Paul VI said, development is the movement of people from less human condition to fuller human conditions. So it's human conditions in every sense, economic, political, social, cultural, religious, psychological, spiritual, whatever. It's the fullness of the human person. Now, what does that mean in Zambia? I have a wonderful opportunity. I write a weekly column for the main newspaper, The Post, the independent paper. And this week, as well as last week, and quite a few other weeks, it'll take a theme that really is coming under the kind of vision that Populorum Progressio offered. For instance, this week the column was on wages. and are wages really decent enough for people to live a full human life or so? And that was something very strongly discussed. Of course, that's been a strong theme in the social teaching, but it was strongly discussed in Popolo and Progressio. Right now, there's a lot of new investment coming into Zambia. The mines are booming or so, and particularly because copper price is so high. And people are saying, look how Zambia is developing. But it hasn't yet trickled down, and that's not the right way to do it, to have it just simple trickle down, to better schools, better health care, better housing, sanitation, water. These things that make up the human environment are not adequately being dealt with. And that's why a lot of us, including the Bishops' Conference, the Justice and Peace Office, challenges the government, challenges the people, and say, just don't rejoice that economic indicators are going up, you know, growth, inflation is coming down, new investments are coming in, but what's happening to the people?
Yes, because I know from when I was working in Lusaka myself, you could go into the shanty compounds and you might go into a house that was just one room and have 18 people. I remember this one in particular, 18 people living in that one room, and all their clothing and everything else was just hung on the wall in plastic carrier bags. You would have six families sharing one common toilet, and the water would be a standpipe down the road somewhere. Nobody bothers about the people in the compounds. Now, how do you try and reach them?
Basically, you know, our center is a research and advocacy center. We don't have direct services, so we're not out. Our team is not out, say, digging wells or providing food or something like that, but focusing on the issues of policy that would say to the government, grand, there's some new mines opening up, for instance, in the southern part of the country, nickel mines or so. That's maybe that's great, but what about the people? What about the people that you've just described that are living in those conditions? Are they going to benefit from new economic indicators going up and up? So what does our center do? Our center does very much what certainly Popolo and Progressio called for and the justice and peace movement across the world has called for, and that is clarify the issues with good analysis, good research, but broaden them out with a value dimension. And that value dimension comes from our faith, comes from our social teaching of the church, that people are the most precious resources. They're the best resources that a country has. So don't just say, well, we've discovered new nickel or maybe some new copper is opening up, but what is happening to the people? And so part of our task at the JCTR, Jesuit Center for Theological Reflection, would be do the kind of research that then draws the attention of the government or of the World Bank or the IMF. Two nights ago before coming here, I spent an evening with a group of officials from the World Bank in discussion on precisely this issue. Is Zambia really developing with all of these economic indicators improving? If you were to come to Zambia, there's a lot more vehicles on the road in Lusaka or so. The hotels are fancy. There's a lot of guest houses. There's a lot of things that just give the impression, you know, this is a booming country. But you go just a short ways out of that boom area, and it will be in areas like you've described in the shanty compounds, where people are living in less than human conditions, and therefore development hasn't come to them.
But also, it seems to me that with talking about the boom in the mines, I know from my nursing background, if somebody came in sick, you could more or less automatically diagnose them as have, if it was a man, you could almost automatically diagnose them as having HIV/AIDS. Because they were so far away from their families, there was access to alcohol, use of prostitutes abundantly. Is any of that being addressed? Because it seems to me that if the country is developing, the ones who are going to benefit are going to be the mine owners and the company that makes condoms.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly HIV and AIDS is a very serious problem in Zambia. We're one of the hardest hit. The national percentage of those who are infected is somewhere around 17%. maybe in the urban areas like Lusaka, where I live, maybe 22%, maybe in the tourist area like Livingston, 30% or so infected. But as we say, 100% of the people are affected. Everyone is touched. So what is being done? How can that response to be? Well, one thing I think is it has to be seen, and certainly we have pushed this a lot, an analysis of the HIV/AIDS issue as not just a medical pharmaceutical question or not just a behavioral change question, but a development question. It's intimately linked with the status of women, women's possibilities, education levels. It's intimately linked with nutrition, with jobs being available, with a whole kind of human development environment within which then you can talk about, well, you know, behavioral change. But what if a young woman can't behave or change like that because maybe she's on the street because she's feeding three or four kids at home?
Because very often prostitution in somewhere like Zambia isn't a case of choice. It's a case of there's nothing else to do.
No, we've been very much struck by that. I remember we were doing a study in terms of some educational opportunities in one of the cities outside of Lusaka. And one of the researchers, a young man, part of the Justice and Peace, saw this woman later in the evening and said, you know, what are you doing on the street like this? You know, in 1 month's time, you'll die. And the young woman looked at him and said, I may die in 1 month's time, but unless I'm on the street tonight, my three or four children at home will die within a week's time. You know, she's not on the street by choice as an enjoyable sort of a thing. She's forced in that way. So you've got to address that question in terms of the role of prostitution. You've got to address the question of, say, the girls that are finishing secondary school and, you know, the expenses, the family has saved money, she's finishing school, but they don't have money for the final exams. But the sugar daddy waiting outside the school, if she gives him something, he'll give her something. So you get this kind of a recognition that HIV and AIDS is intimately related to development questions.
Sometimes laughter, or sometimes pain. Sometimes winning, sometimes losing. Don't give up, the best is yet to come.
Bereavement, vocations, facing death, fatherhood, migration, relationship breakdown, confession, and the environment are just some of the Letters Pod podcast initiatives of the Clifton Diocese in England. I had the opportunity to speak to Mary Colwell about this new venture. Her podcast about Clifton Cathedral recently won the prestigious Jerusalem Award for the diocese. So, Letters Pod, as the series is called, is only following in a line of winners. Yet, as Mary points out, the aim of the series is to be alongside people and to offer hope and support.
You did, yes. That was for a podcast I made about the cathedral itself. Because Bristol's quite a dynamic city, people come and go the whole time here. I thought that a podcast just telling people what the cathedral was, giving you a flavour of it, would be quite helpful if people had just come to the city and were looking around for a church to go along to. And we won a major award for that, so that was great.
So did you have to submit it, or did they just hear about it?
No, we submitted it, and I think there was another 10 podcasts in that category. It was for the new media category.
And was that just for England and Wales, or was that for across the world?
I think it's a national one. It's the whole of Great Britain, as far as I understand it. The Jerusalem Awards is sponsored by Sainsbury's Trust.
How is it that a supermarket got into Catholic podcasting then?
Well, I think it's not necessarily into Catholic podcasting. I think the Sainsbury's family set up a number of trusts, and they fund a whole series of good works. A very charitable organisation, the Sainsbury family. And this was just one of their charitable foundations that puts on this award every year. And it's for all religious broadcasting, Christian broadcasting, not necessarily Catholic.
How did you get into podcasting yourself?
I am a producer at the BBC, so that's my stock in trade, really. And I just realised that the church wasn't using this new technology to the best advantage. I mean, there's a lot to say, and very often people say, if only I knew about that, or I didn't realise that, or I hadn't thought about things like that. And it was a way of getting information and ideas and inspiration across. That where you didn't just have to rely on the medium of radio or television, which is very competitive and difficult to get a foothold in there. Whereas anyone can make a podcast, and the diocese, the Clifton Diocese and the Cathedral have very good websites, so why not use it for all it's worth? And it's working. I think it's great.
Yes, because you have incorporated the podcasts into the website, but your latest initiative is very much a pastoral one.
Yes, it is, yeah. It struck me that when I was reading the newsletter every week, or when I went to the small chapel in the cathedral where people write down their prayer requests, very often the prayers that people want being said for them are kind of common themes, if you like. So they're around illness or bereavement or money worries or concerns they have in their lives. And we all worry, basically, at some time or other about the same sorts of things. And it struck me that wouldn't it be lovely if we had a whole series of podcasts that reflected those concerns. And I was very keen that we chose people that had been through something themselves or had direct experience of helping people with a particular problem. So it wasn't someone pontificating from the outside, if you like, that it was people who actually knew what they were talking about, saying what their thoughts were from their own perspective on this problem. And so we have everything from students at university through to a guy who lost his wife through breast cancer, I did one on the environment, someone else did one on facing death. She's a palliative care nurse. So a great range of things. And, to be honest, the list is endless, really. We could go on and on and on.
Well, how are you going to actually publicise these? Because they, as you say, they are things that everybody faces and they're very real situations. But how are people going to get to know about it?
I think only through advertising, through getting people to help us say that they're there, so anybody can listen to them and anybody can get whatever they can from them. And I'm just hoping that, people, more and more people will get to hear about them and will use them for what they're there for, which is a source of hopefully comfort or inspiration or bit of advice or whatever it is. They're not all depressing by any means, and we don't want it to be that. We want it to reflect a whole range of human experience.
Yes, because when I was reading up about what the podcasts are going to entail, they really are very real situations and they really are trying to give hope. They're not looking at doom and gloom.
No, not at all doom and gloom. And I think that would be very counter to faith to let them be doom and gloom, because faith is always about hope. And no matter what situation you're in, and people can be in pretty awful situations, there is always that hope and there is always that sense of wisdom and learning through being in a situation or going through something very terrible or something challenging. It doesn't have to be terrible. So it's that insight, that hope, that wisdom that comes just from the rough and tumble of life that we hope will come out of this.
And so we come to the end of our programme for today. You can hear it all again in whole or in its parts if you go to our website at www.vaticanradio.org/English. I am Sister Janet Ferns. Until we meet again, may God bless you.
You've been listening to the English programme of Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.